is a very exciting parsha, Parshat Vayera. And as we know, the parsha begins with Avram sitting at the entrance to his tent, engaging with God. And then there are these three visitors that appear. Avram asks the Almighty, "Stay here, don't leave. I just have to take care of these guests." He runs to the guests, and he brings them in and prepares for them some bread, some meat, some cheese, butter. They then ask him, "Where's your wife?" "Oh, she's back in the tent." And one of the guests says, "And in a year's time, I'm coming back, Ula Sarah Vein, and Sarah's going to have a son." And the Torah tells us that when Sarah heard this, Sarah laughs. She says, "Ha'afum name leid vanizakanti." You know, is it possible that I'm going to give birth when I've gotten so old? And God says to Avram, "Lama zetzachaka Sarah?" Why did Sarah laugh and say, "How could I give birth if I'm old?" Really, she had said, if my husband is old, but Hashem changed it to keep peace between husband and wife. So you see that Rashi says, if God will change the...
White lies.
God will say a lie to keep peace, so certainly all of us can learn that we can say lies to keep peace. And then Avram confronts Sarah and says, so why did you say this? Why did you laugh? And Sarah says, "No, I didn't laugh." And Avram says, "No, you did." That's the end of that story. Then the Torah goes on to say that these people who were with Avram, one of the angels leaves, two of the angels continue on towards Sodom. Vayashkifu al pnei Sodom. And they look out onto the face of Sodom, and the people of Sodom are very terrible and sinful. And then God says, you know, "Can I hide from Avram what I'm about to do? Avram's going to become a great nation, and I love him because he teaches his children to go in the ways of God and to keep tzedakah and mishpah, charity and justice." And therefore, God tells Avram, you know, "I'm about to destroy Sodom." And Avram then really courageously starts to argue with Hashem to try to save Sodom. And he negotiates. He says, "Well, maybe there are 50 tzaddikim in the city. Will you destroy the whole city? If there are 50 tzaddikim, how could the most righteous of the world die the righteous and the sinners?" God says, "Okay, if there are 50, I would save them, but there aren't 50. Maybe there are 45. There aren't 45. Maybe there are 40. There aren't 40. Maybe there are 30. There aren't 30. Maybe there are 20. There aren't 20. Maybe there are 10. There aren't 10. And then Avram stops, and the angels show up in stone. So I saw a beautiful piece here from the Shem Yishmuel. The verse says that the angels, Vayashkifu al pnei Sodom. It's an interesting phrase, Vayashkifu, almost like the word Hashkafa, ideology. It doesn't say Vayistaklu, they looked, Vayabitu, they saw, Vayiru. It's Vayashkifu. It's a strange term. So Rashi says, Kal Hashkafa Shebamikra L'ra. The term Hashkafa is to look, and it causes great tragedies. So Vayashkifu al pnei Sodom, these are angels sent to destroy Sodom. When they look at Sodom and they see all the misbehavior of Sodom, they're going to destroy Sodom. So this is another reason why we have the term Vayashkifu, is because it's a very critical look. It's a look that's foreshadowing terrible disasters. Says Rashi, there's one exception. And that exception is as part of the ritual of Vidui Masros. In the land of Israel, anything that grows, a percentage is to be given away. So grain, apples, oranges, 2% is given to the Kohen as Truma. Then 10% is given away to the Levi as Maaser Rishon. Out of that, another 10% is taken from, that becomes Trumas Maaser. Then another 10% is given away to be brought up to be eaten in Yerushalayim in years 1 and 2 of the Shemitah cycle. In years 3 of the Shemitah cycle, that second 10% is given to the poor, Maaser Ani. So in year 4 of the Shemitah cycle, in Erev Pesach, there's a mitzvah for the farmer to say, "I did it all. I did it all right. The Truma's out of the house, the Maaser's out of the house, and I didn't do anything wrong. I didn't eat Master Shani when I was impure. I didn't eat Master Shani when I was an Onain. I didn't allow the Truma to become impure. Sisi Kachala Shirtzi Visani. I did everything that I was commanded. And then what does he end with? Hashkifa. He turns to God. He says, Hashkifa. Do Hashkafa. Do this critical look. Mima'on katshecha min hashamayim, from your holy residence, from the heavens, uvarech esamcha es Yisrael, and bless your children Israel, your nation Israel. So why the word hashkafa? Hashkafa is always a term of destruction, as in vayashkifu al pnei Sodom, the angels look critically at Sodom to destroy Sodom. Why is the farmer saying, God, hashkifa, look down, uvarech, and bless? Hashkifa is not bless. Hashkifa is destruction. So why hashkifa uvarech? So Rashi says in this week's parsha, great is the power of gifts to the poor. What is he saying? Look down. He said, I did everything I was supposed to do. I gave to the Levi Maaser Rishon, the Levim are poor. I gave to the poor Maaser Ani, the poor are poor. So if you're giving gifts to the poor, that can turn what is normally an attribute of harshness and anger and punishment into mercy, compassion, and blessings. So it becomes Hashkifa Mimon Kachcha Min Hashamayim, look down from your holy residence from the heavens and bless your nation Israel. That's Rashi. So Shem Yishmael is trying to understand, what is it about Hashkafa, this term that somehow makes it critical, and what is it about the poor, that there's something about giving to the poor that they can transform Hashkafa from being critical to being the opposite, to being a blessing. I know Rav Soloveitchik said that hashkafa perhaps means to look past the surface, to look deeply. So the people of Sodom, he said, you know, they put on a show. They had laws, but the laws were very horrible laws. But there was a show, we're following the laws. These are rules. So when you look past it, though, there's nothing there. Whereas when someone gives to the poor, so that's showing that deep down he's really a generous person. He really has that, you know, Jewish neshama. So that giving to the poor makes God turn the hashkafa, the deep penetrating gaze, into a blessing. That's what Rav Soloveitchik said. But Shem Yishmael has a whole different approach. Shem Yishmael suggests the following. He says, we know that the spiritual and the physical really can't work together, because the physical is limited and the spiritual is extending the Almighty, who's infinite. I like to give the parable. Imagine if I would take this plastic cup and put it underneath Niagara Falls and try to catch the waters of Niagara Falls into this plastic cup. The cup's going to blow up very quickly, because this is a small little plastic cup. It's weak. It's very, very delicate. You put in thousands and thousands of gallons rushing at the pace that they're coming down Niagara Falls. It's all going to blow up. So that's really what should happen when the spiritual gets too close to the physical. There's the infinite, the Almighty, coming into something physical. It should blow up. That's the whole concept that the Kabbalists have called Shviras HaKelim, the shattering of the vessels. But according to the Ari, when God first made the world, so first there was just the infinite God. He withdrew into himself. He contracted into himself to create a vacuum. Into this vacuum, he sent out vessels. And then into the vessels, he put some of his own light. But when the vessels were getting his light, because his light is infinite and the vessels are finite, the vessels couldn't hold the light. They shattered. They blew up. That's called the Shvira Sakelim, the shattering of the vessel. So that should happen whenever there is, you know, the spiritual coming too close into the physical realm. The physical should just blow up. It can't stand so much spirituality. So we find, for example, that there was a person in the book of Shoftim, Manoach, who didn't have children. And an angel shows up to the wife of Manoach, and she runs and says to Manoach, we got an amazing thing. An angel showed up. We're going to have a child. The child should be a Nazir. This is Shimshon. So Manoach gets all scared. He says, Mos Namus, Ki Elokim Ra'inu. We're going to die. We just saw this godly being. We're going to die. He goes, how can we possibly survive when we are too close to that which is infinite, there's so much energy there, there's so much life there, that the physical can't survive. So maybe hashkafa is from the word, hashkafa means a connection. And the connection to the Almighty, when he's too connected, that blows everything up. So when the Almighty comes in and he connects very deeply, that blows everything up. That's why you have a pasuk. The pasuk says, Tosef Rucham. You will add to their spirit, Yigva'un, and then they die. And when God adds to the soul, it's so much soul, the body can't hold it anymore, and then a person passes away. So when there's so much connection to God, who is infinite, the finite, the physical, simply can't hold it. And maybe that's what hashkafa is. Hashkafa means a very deep connection. When there's a very deep connection with God, then things blow up. Except what? Except if a person gives gifts to the poor. That's what Rashi says. Every time it says hashkafa, it's a disaster, except for giving gifts to the poor, which transforms the attribute of harshness into mercy. Why? Because when a person gives gifts to the poor, he learns from those who are poor. And he learns to be a humble person. This is a big theme in the Shemi Shmuel. The Shemi Shmuel quotes his father, who said, why do we have both the mitzvah of tzedakah and all these mitzvahs of giving to the poor, like maaser ani, peah, leaving a corner of the field for the poor to cut, leket, whatever drops from the field the poor should pick up, shikha, if a person forgets a bundle, the poor should come take it, peret and ololos, if they're, you know, grapes on a vine and there's only one or two left on the cluster, the poor should be allowed to come pick it, misshapen grapes should be allowed to for the poor. We were already giving tzedakah. And the law of tzedakah is to give the person what he needs. So why is there a need for all these other things? So the Shem Yishmael's father said, you give tzedakah when somebody asks for help. He needs help, so you give him tzedakah. The idea of why Hashem said, besides giving tzedakah, you should leave a corner of the field for the poor, and you should give leket shikha to the poor, and you should have maser ani. Let's say there's no one who's poor coming around to ask for help. So then you weren't drawn to them, but it's important for you to be around poor people. Not so much to help the poor people, but to help you. I need to learn from the poor people. And what do I learn from a poor person? I'm in the company of someone who's brokenhearted. And a brokenhearted person has Hashem in a way that a satisfied, confident person will never have. Because Hashem loves to be with the brokenhearted people. That's where Hashem is found. That's the Haftorah that we read on Yom Kippur. The Haftorah that we read on Yom Kippur is about Aniya Merudim Tavi Bayis, the destitute you should bring into the house. And then the verse says, Ki Ani es, the Ani es Daka Ushval Ruach Eshkon. And for me, with the depressed Daka Ushval Ruach and low of spirit, that's where I reside. The Almighty says, I am found with those who are low, broken, open, humble, submissive. The Almighty is with them. The Almighty is there to help those brokenhearted souls so, so deeply, so, so powerfully. So that's why besides tzedakah, we have to, you know, maybe there is no poor person. Well, a corner of the field is for the poor. So they've got to come. I have to be with them. I need to learn from them. I need to gain from them. So that's the idea. Normally, if Hashem connects to something physical, it's like, you know, Lahavdil, putting Niagara Falls into a plastic cup, the plastic cup's going to blow up. But if the plastic cup itself is not a cup, it's just open, then there's room for Niagara Falls to come in. When there is a very humble person, a person with a broken heart, there's room for Hashem to be there. Because he doesn't take up any space. He's not, oh, I'm this. If I'm this, and then there's all this energy coming in, I can't hold it. But if I don't take up any space, I'm humble, I'm submissive, I'm meek, I have a broken heart, I'm lowly, then the Almighty can come in and can bring in more and more. And then a person can connect even to hashkafa. So that's what Rashi says. Normally hashkafa is a term of disaster, because it's the Almighty connecting, there's this overwhelming flow of life. But if it's matnos aniyim, if a person's giving to the poor, He's giving trum, he's giving maser ani, he's giving peya, he's taking everything out of the house. He says to God, I've done what I'm supposed to do. Then he can say, okay, now God, ashkifa, now turn and look, and it's not going to be a problem because you'll be so connected, and I can take it because it's not me. I've learned from the poor people to be humble, to be lowly. I have a broken heart. A broken heart is just the right way to become spiritual. The way to be spiritual is to have a broken heart, to be totally open, totally humble, totally submissive, and that a person gains from being in the company of poor people. He learns from poor people how to be a humble man. I saw this story. It's a famous Hasidic story. There was a man who was extremely generous, but so poor. He had nothing. And whatever he had, he gave away. So there was a great Hasidic Rebbe, I forget who it was, who came to this man's house, and he felt so bad for the man. You know, like everything he has, he's giving away, and it's so hard for him. He's so poor. So he prayed to God that this man should become very, very wealthy. He left, and the man became very, very wealthy. You know, this, that, everything worked out. The man became very wealthy. So a couple years later, he was talking to people from this town. We'll call this man Yanko. He said, well, how's Reb Yankel doing, right? He must be doing great. They said, oh, Reb Yankel. They start cursing him. What a horrible man. He's so nasty. Anyone who tries to visit, he throws them out. He's not willing to give any charity to anyone. He's this rich miser. So the Rebbe said, wow, this is really terrible. So he goes over to this man's house and he knocks. And there's a guard there and a servant there. And they say, no, nobody can come in. Nobody can talk to him. He said, tell this fellow that, you know, so-and-so is here to see him, and I have to see him. So they say, he's not going to let you in. He said, go tell him who I am. So they go, they say, you know, this following Rebbe is here. He said, oh, yeah, I remember that Rebbe. He said, yeah, absolutely, come in, you know. My fortune changed after his blessing. So the Rebbe comes in, he says, you know, I want to understand, what's the difference between a mirror and a window pane? So the guy says, I don't know, what's the difference? He said, they're both made out of glass, so why in the mirror does a person only see himself? But through a window pane, a person sees the people outside on the street. So the fellow said, well, the mirror has something behind the glass. So the rabbi said, all it has is a little layer of silver. If you scratch away the silver, then you can see through the mirror the people out on the street. You can see on the other side of the window pane, the other side of the glass. So you used to have no silver. Then you saw everybody. You got a little silver, so now you only see yourself. You don't allow anybody in. The Almighty wants to take away that silver so that you should see the other people. So the man started to cry. He said, Rebbe, you're 100% right. I was so terrible what I did. Please don't pray that the wealth should leave me. I'm going to let everybody in. I'm going to give. And that's the story. The story was that he let people in. He was generous again. But the idea that the Hasidim are trying to say is that what gives the blessing is to be with all these brokenhearted people and the poor people and the humble people. Aniyam merudim tavi bayis. Because then when a person's with them, he also learns to be very submissive and humble and open to Hashem. So through the gifts of the poor, that creates the ability to get enormous amounts of holiness. And not to find that the excess holiness causes a disaster. What was the sin of the people of Sodom? The sin of the people of Sodom was that they didn't give tzedakah. The Navi Yechezkel tells us that the people of Sodom had tremendous wealth. V'yad ani lo hechziku. But they would not help poor people. They were just using the wealth for themselves. They wouldn't give charity to any other people. And that was the core of their sin. The Ramban writes that the core of the sin of the people of Sodom was that they were in Eretz Yisrael. In God's land, he doesn't tolerate misbehavior. It's in front of the eyes of God. God doesn't accept this type of misbehavior. In front of God, a person needs to behave. In the same way we find throughout Jewish history, the land of Israel does not tolerate misbehavior. The Jews misbehaved, and we got thrown out. We lost the first Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash. You read the book of Shoftim. The Jews are worshiping idols, and then the enemy comes in and has power. Then when we We turn to God. The enemy doesn't have power. We were able to succeed. And again, we worship idols. It's always the case. The land of Israel does not accept misbehavior. It's Eretz Asher Ein Hashem Elokecha Ba. It's the land God is watching, and He demands more from it. So that's the idea here. Whenever we have hashkafa, it's a tremendous burst of a lot of connection to God. So normally, the hashkafa creates a problem. It makes things break. But if there's tremendous humility being attached to the poor, and learning from the poor to be humble and to be brokenhearted, then we have the room to hold all of the blessing. And that's what happened. Vayashkifu al pnei Sodom. These angels look to stone. They connect with stone. And they bring their holiness to stone. But what's the problem in stone? In stone, they don't accept the poor. They don't help the poor. So you have a tremendous amount of holiness, a tremendous amount of life, without the tools, without the vessel to hold this life. And as a result, the place of stone blows up. The land of Israel does not accept it. And as a result, there's a transformation of the people of stone, and there's a terrible destruction. Maybe that's what we can explain another verse. The verse says that God tells Avram, Erdana ve'er'eh, I'm going to go down now and see. Hakitza'akasa, is it like her screams? Asu, that they're really doing, and then kala, then I'm going to wipe them out. In other words, I'm going down. I'm going to send angels. And let me see if that will stir something in them. There are angels coming to them, and they're going to stir it all. Is that going to bring them back? If it doesn't bring them back, there's no hope. And then I'm going to wipe them out entirely. They were such bad people that when the holiness came in, not only did it not stir them for tshuva, they became even worse. The angels come in, and now they have the whole story with Lot. Lot invites the angels, and they gather around the house. They want to rape the angels. They want to devastate them. They got even worse. So apparently we can try to take from this an inspiration. When holiness comes in, what's the way to really hold on to it? By connecting to the poor, by being very humble people. Every Shabbos, there's an enormous flow of holiness coming in. Shabbos Kodesh is coming. So maybe the way to get to Shabbos is to first be a humble person. Before Shabbos, to think about being a humble person, to give tzedakah, to learn from the poor, to be a person with a broken and open heart. And by being a person with a broken heart, then we merit to really hold on to Shabbos. And maybe that's what we find in a Medrash. The Medrash says that Shlomo HaMelech said, Hevel Havalim. Everything is empty. Hakol Havel. It's all empty. He said it 7 times. Empty, empty. It's all vanity and empty. Maybe the idea is that we should realize we shouldn't be proud of this. We shouldn't be proud of that. It's all Hevel. If we say that 7 times, then we're ready for Shabbos for the 7th day. If we're humbled and we're open, we have a broken heart, then we can get the enormous amount of holiness. And through that holiness, we can absorb all the Kedusha and we won't blow up. On the contrary, we can get the Hashkafa, which is a source of blessing. So that to me was an amazing idea, the power of great humility. Another, you know, very scary idea that it's there, so I'll share with it. At the end of the parsha, we have the story of the Akedah, where God tests Avram. The Torah stresses, Elokim nisas Avram. God tested Avram, and God tells Avram, Kachnas binchas yichidcha, take your son, your only one, the one you love, Yitzchak, offer him up as a karban on one of the mountains that I will delineate to you. Very difficult test, a very great challenge. Avram goes to do this, to fulfill the test, and he passes it with tremendous achievement. God says, Atu yadati, now I know ki re Elokim ata. So what precipitates this test? So here are two very different perspectives. The Rashbam, who's very, very pshat-oriented. Rashbam just says, you know, what does the text say? Don't show me Gemara, Medrash. I just want to explain the simple meaning of the text. So the Rashbam says the simple meaning of the text is that the test is a result of what happened before. Because the Torah says, Achara dvarim ha'ela, after these words, V'elokim nisas Avram, God tested Avram. So it's linked to what happened right before. What's the section right before? The section right before is where Avram makes a treaty with Avimelech, the king of the Gaza Strip, the king of the Philistines. Avimelech comes and he says to Avram, he wants to make a treaty. They have a little bit of a back and forth about the way the shepherds of Avimelech have been treating Avram. And so finally they agree to a treaty. And the agreement is, Im tishkor li ulinini ulinechti, that the two will not, you know, violate each other's space, so that Avram and his descendants and his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren, they're not going into Aza, they're not going to take anything of Aza, and the people of Aza, Avimelech, they're not going to take from the other territory, which is going to be for Avram and his children, his grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. So the Rashbam says, what right did Avram have to make such a treaty? God had told Avram, you're going to get this land. You're going to get the land from Wadi El Arish, all the way in the southwest, which is in the northern Sinai Peninsula, all the way up to the Euphrates, all the way up to Iraq. Adon Nahar Gadol, Nahar Pras. Rashi tells us many times in Chumash. The Euphrates is called Nahar Gadol, the great river, because it is the river which is the boundary of the land of Israel. So what right does Avram to say, Gaza, I'm not taking. Gaza belongs to you, Avimelech, and not only me, but my children and my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren are all obligated by this oath. Be'er Shava, the well of the oath. We're swearing that we're not going to that area and you're not coming to this area. This is all area that God had told Avram you're supposed to have. So the Rashbam says God is telling Avram, you're committing your children and grandchildren to not do what I promised you should be doing? Who says you're even going to have children and grandchildren? Go take your son up to be a carbon on the Akedah. It's a very frightening Rashbam, but that's what he says, just as like the simple reading of the text, because it's right after this, right after the treaty, that's when V'elokim nisas Avram, God is testing Avram. So the test is a continuation of the treaty. So that's one perspective. The Hasidim have a totally different perspective, that the Akedah is not a punishment for Avram. They say all the tests that Avram had were not punishments. In fact, the idea, the Ramban says, of what a test is, nisayon, it's from the word nes, a banner. That when you have a banner, you want to lift it up. So there are all sorts of abilities that a person has, and the test is to pull out these abilities from within us. That we have them inside of us, but are we expressing them? Are we living them? Are we pulling them out? The test is to pull out abilities that we have. So it's not a punishment, it's a blessing. Having the test is pulling out of us good stuff that are there, but we haven't pulled them out. That's what the Ramban says. The word nisayon is connected to the word nes. Nes lihisnoseis, a banner to be lifted up. So according to that, it's not a test as in a punishment. It's on the contrary, it's a blessing for Avram. And what was the point of the blessing, the point of this test? So the Hasidim say the following amazing idea. You know, there's a classical question at the beginning of the Parsha, when Sarah hears that she's supposed to have a child, I'm coming back in a year's time, Ula Sarah Bain, and to Sarah a child, but Yitzchak Sarah Bekirba, Sarah laughs. Why is Sarah laughing? In the end of Parsha's Lech Lecha, God changes Avram's name to Avraham, tells him to do a bris milah, and he says, because you're going to have a son from Sarah. And he says, Sarai's name has to change to Sarah. So didn't Avram say, your name is changed to Sarah, I'm doing a bris milah, because we're going to have a son? So then Avram already was informed that he's going to have a son. He probably told Sarah. So why is she laughing 3 days later when the angel says it? Avram should have said it 3 days ago. So the Ramban already asks this question. The Ramban says Avram must have been so busy he never got a chance to tell Sarah. That's a hard explanation, because he changes her name, he does a bris milah, right? There's a whole episode here. He's not explaining what's going on, that this is about having a child. So others say that no, Avram did tell Sarah that she's going to have a child. And at the time she believed like Avram believed. But now Sarah laughs. Why? Because what did the angel say? Ulasara vein. There'll be a child to Sarah. The Kabbalists say that there are two realms in heaven. There is Duchra, the male realm, and Nukva, the female realm. When the angel says, Lisara bain, to Sarah child, the angel is saying this child is going to be mostly from Nukva, mostly from the female realm. This child is not going to be a normal male child from the male realm. It'll be a male body, but there's something about his soul that's feminine. And in fact, the Kabbalists say initially Yitzchak didn't have the ability to have children because his soul came from the side of Nukva. So that's why Sarah laughs. When Sarah hears Lasara Bain, this doesn't make sense because this isn't the promise. The promise was that Hashem had told Avram, you're going to have a child, and out of that child you'll have many, many children. You'll have a whole nation. That has to be a masculine child. Now being told Lasara Bain to Sarah child, a child who's going to be more with a feminine soul, that doesn't make any sense. That's why Sarah laughs. That's what some of the Mekubalim say. Sarah's laughing. It doesn't make sense because if I'm having a feminine child, but this is the child who's supposed to be the progenitor of a whole nation, it can't be. So then God comes and tells Avram, go and offer Yitzchak up. And for Avram, the core of that test is that here God is asking Avram to kill Yitzchak when God has already promised that Yitzchak is going to be the source of so many future generations. It doesn't make sense. There's a contradiction here. You told me that kibi Yitzchak yikara l'chazara, through Yitzchak you'll have seed. Now you're telling me that I have to go kill Yitzchak. What about your promise to me? So maybe when the verse says vayaras hamakom erachok, Yitzchak saw the place from a distance, maybe it's not the place, but it's a reference to God. You say hamakom yinachim eschem, the place should console you. Vayaras hamakom erachok, Avram saw God at a distance. He said, one second, this doesn't make any sense. God's so far from me. He's telling me to kill Yitzchak when he promised that out of Yitzchak will come children. But even though it made no sense, Avram went to do it. And not only did Avram go to do it, Avram had so much faith, he did it with joy. How do we know Avram does it with joy? First of all, the verse says that the next morning, Avram saddled his donkey. So if he's rushing to do something, that's a sign of joy. And furthermore, God never told Avram the exact place. He said, go to the land of Moriah. Offer him as an offering on one of the mountains. He doesn't tell him though which mountain, just as one of the mountains. It means there's going to have to be a further prophecy to reveal to Avram which mountain. Now to get prophecy, you have to be happy. The Gemara says in the Sechet Pesachim that prophecy only comes to someone who's happy. That's where you find the story with the Navi Elisha, that he once is taken out to say a prophecy. And he sees a wicked person. He says, I'm so upset seeing you, I can't say the prophecy. So bring me some music. And they bring an orchestra. He says, okay, now I feel happy. Now I can get the prophecy. To get prophecy, you have to be happy. Hashem doesn't tell Avram where the Akedah is going to happen. He just says, on one of the mountains that I will show you. He doesn't say where. Avram has to be happy in order to get the prophecy of where the Akedah is going to take place. So Avram has so much faith, he goes with happiness to offer up his son, even though it makes no sense. Vayaras hamakom erachok. He sees God far. He doesn't understand what God is asking of him. It's a contradiction to what God has told him. But he goes to do it with joy, because that's the mitzvah. And so according to the Kabbalists, when he goes and he brings Yitzchak up on top of the altar, Yitzchak actually dies. And the fact is, the name Yitzchak can be rearranged, the letters, to Kates Chai, ending and then living. His life ended at the Akedah, and then Chai, he got new life. He gets a new life, he gets a new soul. That's why in Shmoneh Esrei, the first bracha is Magen Avram. The second bracha, that's Avram's bracha. The second bracha would be Yitzchak's bracha. The second bracha is Mechayim Esen. God brings the dead back to life. Yitzchak himself died, Kates, and then Chai got a new life. That's where you find that the Gemara says, the verse tells us in Parshas Bechukosai, V'zachartius brisi Avram, I'm sorry, V'zachartius brisi Yaakov, V'afis brisi Yitzchak, Va'athes brisi Avraham eskar, v'ha'aretz eskar. God says, I'll remember my covenant with Jacob, and my covenant with Isaac, and I'll remember my covenant with Abraham, and I'll remember the land. So Rashi says the verb, I'll remember, is about the covenant with Jacob. It's about the covenant with Abraham. But with Yitzchak, it doesn't say, I'll remember. It just says, and the covenant with Isaac. Rashi says, God doesn't need to remember Isaac, because the ashes of Isaac are in front of the throne of glory. The ashes of Isaac, but Isaac didn't die. The angel comes and says, don't touch the boy. Release him. Says the Zohar, he did. The soul left, and a new soul came in. Which soul left? The soul that was nukva, lasara vein, the feminine soul that didn't have the ability to have children, that left. That was offered up. And a new soul came down, misitra de duchra, from the side of the male, which has the ability to have children. So here, what was Avram worried about? God, you told me that out of Yitzchak will be a whole nation. Now I'm killing Yitzchak. But really, he's not killing Yitzchak. He's really getting the ability. Yitzchak's now going to be able to be a nation. What he thinks he's losing, Yitzchak being a nation, is actually what he's gaining. Because before Yitzchak goes up onto the altar, he can't be a nation. He doesn't have the ability to give birth to children. He's misitra de nukva. When he comes down off the altar, it's a new Yitzchak. It's a Yitzchak misitra de duchra from the side of male who has the ability to have children. So now a whole nation can come out of him. What he thought he was losing through the temptation is actually what he's gaining when he's succeeding in the test. Now he's actually gaining a child who could have children. That's why the Kabbalists say, the Arachaim says it in this week's Parsha, right after the Akedah, the Torah says that Avram heard that Besuel, his relative, had children, including the birth of Rivka. That Rivka's born only once there could be a match for Rivka. Once Yitzchak's soul, which is Minukva, from the feminine, has left, and now he has a soul Miduchra, he has a soul from the masculine, now he can have a wife, Rivka. That's when Rivka comes into this world. So after the Akedah, we hear of the birth of Rivka, because the birth of Rivka is now going to work. So now there's going to be a feminine with to be a match to the masculine. And now Yitzchak can actually fulfill the mission that he has, which is to be the father of the Jewish nation. So according to the Mekubalim and the Hasidim, the idea of the Akedah is not that it's a punishment, chas v'shalom, the opposite. The Akedah is actually the blessing of now Yitzchak being able to fulfill his mission. That Yitzchak initially was born Yisitra de Nukva, from the side of the feminine, but now, through the Akedah, through this whole experience of giving up his life, the Sitra de Nukva, the feminine soul, left, and now Sitra de Duchra, now a masculine soul, came in, and now he can actually achieve that which he's supposed to achieve, which is to be the father of the Jewish nation. So it's actually not a punishment, but the opposite. It's actually a blessing and enabling Yitzchak to fulfill the mission that Hashem has for him. So these are some ideas of this week's parsha. Different perspectives.
How is that a test then?
Avram didn't know this. Because when he's going through it, he doesn't know all of this. But after, in the hindsight, he looks back and says, oh my God, this challenge was actually the bracha giving my child the ability to give birth to children. And therefore, Rivka is born then, and all these blessings come at that point.